Good morning. Thank you for joining. We're ready now for our Mashiach and Geula class number. I don't know which number, whatever it is. It's already in. We are holding over here in the midst of Parshas Lech Lecha as we go through the Torah and finding Mashiach. And the more I'm doing this from week to week, the more exciting it's getting that mamish every pasuk and every story is saturated with Mashiach's light. So last week we had spoken about, we left off with the idea of the blessing, V'nivrechu b'chal kol mishpachais adama, as Hashem told Avram Avinu, how there is going to be an implantation in the Jewish people from the outside in order to bring about Mashiach. We also mentioned that the reason why the Pasuk tells us right at the beginning of the first journey of the first Jew that a Yid is not supposed to divert his attention even one moment from Mashiach. And that you see that in Avram Avinu. As soon as he does his first job as a Jew, is to go to Eretz Yisrael, he is already taking light with him. And as we spoke last week, the Zohar says that the reason why it says that he took light with him, let me read the pasuk to you. It says, "Vayelach Avram, kasha dibrei lev Hashem, vayelach itoy loit." Loit went with him. And the next pasuk it even says stronger that not only did loit come, but vayikach Avram as Sarai ishtay. Avram took Sarai his wife, ves loit ben Achiv and his nephew loit. So we learned last week because in loit Avram Avinu saw David HaMelech and consequently he saw Mashiach. So on the first. The Kavana, from the very beginning, as the first Jew takes his first step to serve Hashem, it's already doing the Avodah with the intention that this is going to lead to the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu. And that's the reason why he's taking light with him. Now, the Shlach HaKadosh brings the Zohar, and the Shlach HaKadosh says, to further explain, he says, what's David really doing over here? Why, you know, how does David come into the picture? I mean, Avram is now going to the land. Why Dafka, at this moment, does David HaMelech appear? So the Shlach HaKadosh says that I'm going to preface just a thing. Those who didn't mute, I think it's pushing six or something just to mute, to mute yourself out so there's no other noise on the phone. I think it's six that is mute. Okay. So, at the beginning, the Shlach HaKadosh says, a really fascinating Shlach, he says, let me preface what the Ramban says, what Nachmanides says in this parasha. When it comes to the Sippurim, he says, you know, what Ramban says in general about Avram Avinu at this time. Because when we read the story, as Avram Avinu, you know, we're reading a story of our ancestors. We're reading the story of our fathers. We're reading their trials, their tribulations. And of course, we can emulate them and learn a lot about how they handled life and how they devoted they were to Hashem and be inspired by their dedication and the like. But the Ramban opens up for us a much deeper understanding about where it was really going on. And with the idea that the Rebbe would repeat, and you know, Chassidus, it's all the time, Ma'aseh Avos Siman Labanim, that these were not private lives of private individuals. These were the precursors. These were the people that were the trailblazers for the Jewish people. And their avodah that they did was actually laying the groundwork for everything that's going to happen. And by them having did this avodah already, and as they broke through the very, very difficult resistance, it made already our journey be much easier because we're just following in their footsteps that they've already done. So really, in the story of Avram, he says, this is a klal gadol. In all the story that you're going to see that the Torah is going to relate to us, in the stories of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, you have to see them not only as their own private story, but also as the nevuah taking shape, the prophecy taking shape and formulating itself in their lives so that this can later manifest in the history of the Jewish people. So you have to see the entire Jewish history in the avos. So to begin, what's the idea over here? So he says that a very important idea Ramban says is that whenever Hashem gives a prophecy to a Navi, it's not enough for Hashem showing the Navi it in some kind of a vision. Hashem many, many times desires that the Navi should do an activity, do an action related to that prophecy, so that they can channel that prophecy into the physical world. Obviously, we understand there are many layers of existence. And the prophet, when he's receiving the prophecy, has transcended, and his neshama has risen beyond the material physical world of time and space as we know it. And therefore, if he experiences and receives the prophecy in that transcendental state, it's not necessarily going to impact or have that kind of an effect within the physical, within our universe as we know it. That's why the Navi is commanded by Hashem to attach himself to something physical and to bring that message down, mamish, into the physical. And he gives an example from Yirmiyahu HaNavi, that Yirmiyahu HaNavi was told when he was giving a prophecy for the destruction of Bavel, he said, he wrote a little scroll, and then he told him, take the scroll and tie it to a rock, and then throw it into the Euphrates River. And by doing that, he said, so Bavel will sink. Bavel will go down. Now, what was that negeya? Why was that important for him to throw it in? And this is mamash the idea. It's not enough to prophesize about the collapse of the Babylonian kingdom, but you also have to do something physical to bring it, to draw it down, begashmias. And he brings other examples from Elisha. There was something else that he did. Everything. So the same is with the Avos. It wasn't just enough that Hashem should show them a vision. Hashem showed already Adam Arishan, everything, the vision of what's going to happen. But that wasn't enough. When it was coming down to the Avos, Hashem actually showed them, not just, and he had them go through these experiences that we're going to have with their children, begashmi es mamish. And the Navi, when he did, when he experienced those experiences, he knew what Hashem was showing him. He understood it, and he understood its application and what it means for the future. And not only, and again, in addition to him knowing, it left an impact in the world for all time. So, for instance, the Ramban explains, you know, in the Jewish history, there are many Goliaths, but there are primarily two exiles, which are like the two main Goliaths and two main Geulais. There's the Geulas Mitzrayim, and then as we say in Davening, Yigaleinu Sheinis Bekarav, Hashem is going to redeem us a second time. Even though more specifically we had different Goliaths and different redemptions, but two primary redemptions. One that was and one that is going to happen momentarily. So the first redemption so the first Golas of the Jewish people was Golas Mitzrayim. So as we're going to watch the Parsha unfold, Parsha Shlach Lecha speaks to us how Avram Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, and what caused him to go to Mitzrayim was a hunger. And then when he came down to Mitzrayim, they immediately wanted to take control over him by taking away his wife. And Hashem took revenge of them and protected Sarah, took revenge from the Mitzrayim and gave them, as it says, Hashem hit smite Paro with Negoyim Gedolim, which obviously is the same like Makkos. And then when Avram left Mitzrayim, Avram left with a Pare loaded him up with gold and silver. Mikna Kavod Ma'od, as it said, Avram left a very wealthy man when he left Mitzrayim. And not only that, but Pare urged him to leave, and he sent along people to go along to escort him out of Mitzrayim. Well, take a look at that. That's a snapshot of exactly what was going to happen. Yaakov and his children had a hunger, and they went down. Because of that, they went down. The whole family came down to Mitzrayim. Over there, the Egyptians were interested in their wives, and that was the reason why they killed all the males. And they said, V'chalabas techayin, the women we will let live, so that we will have free for all to take the Jewish women. Hashem foiled their plans. That didn't work, as we know the Jewish women were protected in Mitzrayim. Pare received 10 makas, and after the 10 plagues, the Jews went out, b'rechush gadol, and Pare went along with the Jewish people. He sent his people to help them leave as quick as they can. Mamish, a repeat of what happened. So therefore, that's the story at the beginning of time. And then when we continue on and we take a look at the next big story in Parshas Lech Lecha, which we're still going to learn later in the Parsha, is the story continues on with Lot and the war of the four kings that are coming to fight a war against the five kings. So the war with the four kings, which eventually they capture Lot as they come to capture the five kings, which is Sodom and Amira and the other places. So the Ramban says over there as well that these four kings that are coming to fight is symbolic for a future four kings that represent the next series of exiles that are going to come upon the Jewish people. Serious exiles, and which are going to come from the four kings. And if you look in the Pasuk, who are the names of these four kings? The first one is the king of Babel, because that was the first exile after Galus Mitzrayim. The first exile the Jewish people went to was by Nebuchadnezzar. So this was the first one who was the king of Babel. And then the next king is... the next king that it mentions later in the parsha is Kedar La'oimer. He's the king of... No, I'm sorry. Aryoich Melech Elasar. So Nachmanides says, Ramban says, that Aryoich, the king Elasar, he says Elasar is probably, he says V'ulai, it makes sense to him, and I'm sure if it made sense to the Ramban, then this is for sure the fact, that Elasar must have been an ancient city in the city in the country of Persia, in Paras and Madai. Because that was the next Golas, the Golas where the Yidden were in the end of the Golas Babel, as the Persians took over the world, and including the servant enslaving or exiling the Jewish people. So Elasar is the king in Paras and Madai. Kedar La'oimer, who's the king of Elam, he says that the Greek Empire began in Elam. Now Elam is in Persia, but we know that Alexander the Great defeated the Persians. First it was Peter, his father, I think, and he brought about the great defeat of the Persian army, and then he died right away, and Alexander the Great took over. And the Gemara says that the first 6 years, the empire was established out of Elam, out of Persia. So that was the Greek Empire. And from there, they continued to rule other places. And finally, the last king, amazing. His name is Sidol, the name of God, and he's the king, the Pasuk says, V'Sidol Melech Goyim. He's the king of Goyim. Because the last exile, we were battered by nation after nation. It started with Rome, and it continued throughout all of Europe, whether it was the French and the English, the German, the Russians, the Poles, whoever it was, as we went through nation after nation, and then the Sephardim were in the Middle Eastern countries. This was a collage. This was a United Nations, and we're still suffering from a United Nations. And this is all Melech Goyim. And what do? They came through a war, and Avram Avinu going out to fight this war, right? And he says, and he brings over there, I'm sorry, he brings in the Medrash, Amar Abavin, and the Medrash really says this, that Keshem Shepasach B'dalad Malchi is just like the beginning of Jewish history begins with four kings. So too, Einochaisem, Hashem is not going to conclude Jewish history only with four kings. That can mean the four nations, or it can mean four kings today's days. I don't know what that means. But in general, it means the four Goliaths. So the Shlach HaKadosh says, so you see from here, that the whole inyan of Avram Avinu is basically Hashem is taking him through Jewish history till the very end. And so here he points out something. It's not in the Ramban anymore. This is the Shlach HaKadosh. So the Shlach HaKadosh says, take a look, something really interesting. It says, when we talk about light, after Avram comes out of Mitzrayim, it says he comes out and Avram is loaded. By Avram Avinu it says, Avram kavid ma'oid, Avram is loaded with a lot of wealth, ba'mikna with cattle, ba'kesev with silver, ba'gazavu and with gold. However, when it comes to Lot, a few psukim later, in Shlishi Pasikei, it says, v'gam l'loit ha'hoylech al Avram, and also Lot that went with Avram, ha'yitzayin u'bakar, was also sheep, and cattle. It doesn't say that he had silver and gold, but it adds something that it doesn't say by Avram. It says ve'oyhalim, and he had tents. So Lot has tents. It doesn't say by Avram that he had the tents. And he says, so what are these tents? So he brings from a medrash that two oyhalim. The medrash says, who are the oyhalim? The oyhalim are Rus, like we spoke last week, Rus and Nama. These are the two tents. Because a woman is called the tent, a woman is called the home, a woman is called the tent, as it says in the pasuk. V'yadaita, you will know kishalom ohalecha, that your tent is doing well. That means that your wife is okay. So the whole point over here is it was to have light with his ohalim, with Rus, and Nama, which are the two tents that Loit has. And then he continues the Shlach HaKadosh, and he says, and that's where you find something fascinating. The four kings are attacking the five kings, and finally, you see that the last thing they do is that they run and they grab Loit. And when they grab Loit, they leave. It's as if this was the purpose of the whole campaign. First, it goes ahead and it says how they're turning over the whole world. These four kings went, until they get to the five kings, to the wage war with them, they're literally going from place to place and making a churban, they're making a devastation. They're killing these and they're killing those. They're killing the giants over here and this. Finally, they come to the fight against those who provoked them, the five kings who rebelled against them. And then, as if nothing is important to them, but they get Loit, Vayelchu, and they left. The war is over. So he says, even though consciously they didn't know this, but their malach above, their mazel above, knew about it. Because he says the whole point of the four kings that rise against the Jewish people throughout history is all to annul Mashiach. They really don't want Mashiach to come. Just like the Jewish people have been working throughout history to sublimate the world and elevate the world to bring Mashiach, the Klipa puts all of its energy and all of its efforts to fight the coming of Mashiach. So that's why, what are all the Galuyos all about? It wants to destroy Mashiach Tzidkenu. And that's why they come for Loit, because Loit has within him Mashiach's neshama. But Avram goes chasing after them. He defeats them. He get, which is a siman that in the end, Avram is going to defeat, the Jewish people are going to defeat all the nations. Not only one stood up against us to destroy us, but all the nations that stand up against Israel. So many attempts. In the end, as he's saying, Yiddish, vet ashen parach, it becomes absolutely nothing. And Avram, the Jewish people, managed to bring about their Mashiach Tzidkenu. As he emerges from Loit, and then it says, interesting, and it says he brings back as kol rechush sedayim. What does that mean? In other words, Sedayim was also rebuilt because Avram brought back. So he says, because that's what it says in the Navi Yecheskel, it says that when Mashiach will come, the Dead Sea, the area there that was cursed, that since Hashem turned over Sedayim, it was laying in total destruction and desolation, when Mashiach comes, that whole area is going to be rebuilt. So that's the idea. Avram Avinu coming, with Loit coming back, means he's coming with Mashiach. And then he adds and he says, that's why we find Loit is an interesting being. His name is Gematria Adam. Loit is Gematria 45. Same Gematria as Adam. I don't know if I mentioned similar something like this. And that is because Avram is considered Adam. Avram is called Adam HaGadol Ba'anakim. He's called a giant, a man of the great giants. Loit is, and it said Loit looked like Avram. That's why one of the reasons it says that they went and they took Loit was because they wanted, Nimrod wanted to take revenge from Avram, and he thought Loit was Avram because he looked like him. What does it mean that he looks like him? It means that he too is called Adam, because Adam stands for Adam David Mashiach. So he has the ultimate Tzelem Elokim. He has the ultimate appearance of the godly appearance of Mashiach Tzidkenu. But he says the problem was that Loit was acting prematurely. He, I guess, subconsciously knew that he's the one who's ultimately going to rule over the land, because in him is Mashiach. Not him, but in him is the kernel of Mashiach. And therefore, he wanted to take possession of the land of Canaan already, right then and there. But it wasn't ready yet. He himself didn't shed his skin yet. He didn't shed his klipa yet. As we spoke last week from the Maral, that Hashem Dafka put the highest neshama into the darkest place. So Loit was still concealing this great light. And that's why the word light means a curse. It's the klipa that's containing within itself the deepest blessing. Connected, of course, every time we have a shir, it always connects to the parsha. This occurred to me right now. That's really the whole theme of Parsha's Bechu Kaisai, in which we learned today's chitas, if anybody learned it already. You have a whole long list of horrific curses, which are really inside the curses, a magnificent blessing couched and hidden and concealed in these very, very rough psukim. So Loit is he's a curse, but inside of him he has the biggest bracha. And when Mashiach comes, that's when his true Loit, the true light of Loit, is going to appear. And that is the reason why the Shlach HaKadosh says that already from the start and from the very beginning, who does Avram take along with him? He takes along with him Loit, because This is it. Mashiach has to be there throughout the entire procedure. And it's ultimately all about this redemption. Now, it says more about some of this subject in a couple of moments. But when it says that Avram Avinu took Sarai, and he took Lot, and then it says in interesting words, it says, Ve'esanefesh asher asu b'charan, and he took the souls that they made in Haran. Now, it doesn't mean children, because they didn't have any children. So who are the souls that they made in Haran? So Rashi says that they were Magayar people. These were the converts. These were the people that Avram Avinu drew close to his monotheistic belief. There's a fascinating passage on this in the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin. People know this idea, but not everybody knows where the Gemara says it about. It's in the Gemara Masechta Tzadik Zion, Amid Aleph. The Gemara says, Tana Devei Eliyahu, they learned in the Academy of Eliyahu, Sheshes Alpayim Shana Heva Olam, that the world stands for 6,000 years. I mean, the way until Mashiach, till Yom Shekulei Shabbos. Not till Mashiach comes, till Yom Shekulei Shabbos, 6,000 years. It's also the theme of this week's parsha, the first parsha, Parshas Bahar, where it speaks about 6 years you should work the land, and in the seventh year, V'shafsa Aretz Shabbos Lashem, is referring to the ultimate seventh millennium of Yom Shekulei Shabbos. So over there it's going to be 2,000, so the Chazal, and the Eliyahu HaNavi breaks it down as follows. 2,000 years chaos, the world is in a chaotic state. 2,000 years of Torah, which means 2,000 years of repair. The Torah comes to repair the world and to put everything in its place and to harmonize and to bring rectification and healing to the world. And finally, the last 2,000 years is Yemaisa Mashiach. So, and the Gemara says, Ba'avei Niseinu, in our great sins, Mashiach could have come after 2,000 years of Torah. And when the Gemara is talking already, so many of these years passed by, Mashiach didn't come. Rashi says that really, the tikkun ha'olam that needs to happen through Torah was done already. There's enough sufficient time to be done in 2,000 years. Everything after that is supposed to be ready, Mashiach. Now we can understand why the Rebbe is so frustrated when we are already just barely 200 and something years away from the end of the period, which is supposed to be 2,000 years of Yemoisa Mashiach, and it still has not arrived. It's like it doesn't make any sense. But the Gemara says, hold it. When did the 2,000 years of Torah begin? If you're going to say it, Hold on just 1 second. If you're going to say it happened by the giving of the Torah, you don't have 2,000 years from Matan Torah. Now, what is the Gemara saying? Oh, so the Gemara, I don't know, he doesn't quote the whole Gemara, I didn't look it up. The Gemara says you don't have enough. The years don't work out. So the Gemara says, no, you know, from when it begins 2,000 years Torah, it begins when from Esash, Nefesh Asher Asu B'charan, when Avram Avinu converted people, that's when the 2,000 years of Tikkun begin. Because the preliminary work of Torah begins with Avram Avinu. Here's where he begins in Tikkun. And the Gemara says, Avram at that time was 52 years old. Because Avram was born 52 years before the end of the third millennium. Avram was born 52 years before the end of before the end of the second millennium. And Avram Avinu was 52 years old at the beginning of the third millennium. And that's where you have 2,000 years Torah. That's a nefesh, asher asu b'charan. And again, 2,000 years from Avram Avinu was really enough to bring Mashiach. And I guess now we're just adding the icing to the cake all this time from the 2,000 years after Avram, which is the year 4,000. Mashiach could have came already by the year 4,000. Now it's already 5,775 years, 1775 years longer, already into this time of Yemoisa Mashiach. In any case, the pasuk continues, and the psukim say, Avram is now journeying into the land of Israel, and the first thing that happens is that Hashem promises him. Avram comes to the place called Shechem, to Alein Moire. Vayeda Hashem Elov El Avram. Hashem appears to Avram, Vayomer, and he says to him, Lezaracha Etenes Oretz Azois, to your children I will give this land. Now, this promise that Hashem promised Avram Avinu, to your children I would give them your land, this land, is a promise that repeats itself three times in Parshas Lech Lecha. To your children I will give the land, it says it over here. Then, so this is right at the beginning of the parsha, as soon as Avram comes into the land of Israel and he goes to Shechem, over there Hashem makes his first promise, and Avram builds a Mizbeach. Then after Avram comes out of Mitzrayim, and he gets into this dispute with Lot, after Lot leaves him, after he tells Lot, you know, you go to the right, I'll go to the left, you go to the left, I will go to the right, we have to divide. What happens after that is that Hashem Omer al Avram, Hashem says to Avram, Achra yiparid Lot me'imai, after Lot left him, Hashem says, Sona enecha, raise up your eyes, re'emen amakam asher atasham, and see from the place where you are, look to all directions, north, south, east, and west, because the whole land, as kol ha'adash ha'ataraya, the whole land that you see, l'chat nana, to you I will give it, ulezaracha adoylam. Gives him a second time a promise that he's going to give him the land. And then he tells him, I'm going to make, your children are going to be like the dust of the land. If anybody's going to be able to count the dust, so your children will be able to be counted. He tells him to go, actually to stand up and to go walk across the land. Fine. Finally, the third time, then it goes into the story of the war against the four kings, the four and the five. After that, you have the Bris Bein Absarim, the covenant that happens between the pieces. And over there, again, the Eibishter promises Avram, B'yayimahu karas Hashem es Avram Bris Leimor, lezaracha nasati es ha'aretz azois. To your children I've given this land, from the Har Mitzrayim to the Nahar Peros. And he goes on to list the lands of the 10 nations. Keni, Knizi, Kadmoini, Chiti, Prizi, Arifam, Amori, Aknani, Girgashi, Yavusi. This is stunning. I mean, God made a promise. Why does he have to repeat it three times? So there is a sefer called, the sefer is called Teiras HaMincha. And this is a sefer from a student of the Rajba. So we're talking about one of the Rishonim, a student of the Rajba, Shlomo ben Aderes. And he explains this very, very beautifully. And he says that the reason why the promise to Avram Avinu three times that I will give you the land is corresponding to the three Bate Mikdash. The three times, I mean, because the pride, as we see today's in today's Chumash, it's Hashem says, I will break the pride of your strength, which is referring to the Beis HaMikdash. So the crown jewel of the land of Israel is when we have the Beis HaMikdash. And being that, the Jewish people are going to take possession of Eretz Yisrael three times and build three Batei Mikdash. And these three promises are what it is referring to. These are the three promises, what the Torah is referring to when the Pasuk repeats it three times and he tells them, I'm going to give you the land. So what is it? So it works like this. The first time, he says, what's the difference? How does it work? He says, the first promise when Avram, as soon as he comes into Eretz Yisrael, is referring to the Jewish people as well, coming in the first time to the land of Israel with Yeshua ben Nun. He says, the fight that happens between Roya, Avram, and Lot's shepherds, the fight that happens is referring to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. And what happens? What does the Pasuk say? Vahaknani azba aretz. The Kanani is in the land. What does that mean? Because when the Jews were, because since the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and the Jews went to exile, to the Babylonian exile, the land of Israel was reoccupied again by whether Kanani or other nations. So what happened is, so you have like Kanani Azba Aretz, the Kanani re-enters the land. Then after Lot separated from him, I guess after the curse separated from him, which is the 70 years of Galus Bavel, which was some kind of a purging and a cleansing. Hashem tells to Avram Avinu, raise your eyes, look across the land, I've given it to you again. That's when Yidden returned, built the second Beis HaMikdash. He says that the entire time of the second Beis HaMikdash, there was wars and tsaris. It wasn't a peaceful time for the Jewish people. I don't know where that is hinted to in the Psukim. I don't know where it's hinted to in the Psukim, where Hashem tells Avram Avinu, that I don't figure out. But then, he says, then come the four empires. He says the four empires are referring to again the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. Technically, even though we spoke earlier that the first of the empires and the first two are really destroying the first Beis Hamikdash, but he says in general, the four kings are referring to the long galus that the Jewish people are in now. And he makes another interesting statement that the four kings are fighting with the five. So you have really nine kings. He says each of the four empires that the Jewish people that took the Yidden into galus was also joined with another kingdom. It wasn't only one. For example, he brings Babel, the Babylonians, were together with the Kazdim. I always thought that Babel and Kazdim are one, but I guess they're two different peoples that join together. The next galus is Paras, but we know they're joined together as Madai and Paras. Yavan, he says, is unified with Moikdan. Now, Moikdan we know is Macedonia, which is part of Greece. But we know, let's say, for instance, when the Jewish people suffered from the Greeks, it wasn't the Greeks that were living in Greece, it was the Assyrians to the north. So you see, it was again a combination of various different peoples. And then finally, in the last galus, he says it's Edom and Yishmael. Right? We're in this galus of Edom and Yishmael simultaneously through the galus. And now as well, you see at the end of the galus, you know, you have the pressure coming from both Edom and Yishmael and the problems from both of them. I guess that's the combination of the four and the five. Why five? It should be four and four. I don't understand from what he says. I'm just quoting to you what he does say. Then he says, when Avram Avinu finally fights against these four kings, it's referring to the coming of Mashiach, the defeat of the, like we spoke earlier from the Ramban. But he does enter some very interesting things. He says, after Avram Avinu finishes the war, which is that is indicative, and that's referring to Melech HaMashiach, finally defeating all the nations of the world, and he's going to return all the spoils that was taken away from the Jewish people ever. Everything is going to come back. Then after that comes the Briz Bein Absarim, the covenant amongst the pieces, which what happened over there was this great darkness fell upon Avram Avinu. And then he sees an oven, a blazing fire go through the darkness. So even though this sounds very scary, but he says it's positive. This is referring to the Nevuah that it says in Yeshayahu, Kumi Oiri, get up and touch your light. Because even though v'hachoshech yechasa aretz, even when darkness covers the land, and even if you see it looks to be so bleak and so dark in the world, and darkness covers the land, v'araf elu'umin, and a crushing darkness is surrounding the nations, what does the pasuk say? Ki bo oirech, your light has come, u'kvoid Hashem alayach zarach, and the glory of Hashem is shining upon you. So in that, Briz Bein Absarim is referring to the light, the fiery, the oven that comes to Avram Avinu is the light that's in the midst of the darkness, the light of Mashiach. What's going to happen? And then, interesting, only in that third possession does Hashem list to Avram 10 nations, because we have never taken, during the first Beis Hamikdash and the second conquest, we didn't have control over the entire land of Israel. We only had a land of 7 nations. We never had the 10 nations. Only when Mashiach will come, we'll have the 10. And that's the third promise that Hashem tells Avram Avinu at that time. He adds to this, when that is going to happen during that time, he says, we are also going, the Jewish people are going to reach their highest state of perfection, both physically and physical health. All Jews, everybody's going to be healthy. All the ill will become sick. As he brings the pasuk of Yeshaya, as tepekach kechna enei ivrim, the eyes of the blind are going to be able to see. There's not going to be any blind anymore. And Oz Yadalike Kayol Peseach, and a lame person will leap and jump like a ram. That means there won't be anybody that will be confined to a wheelchair or to other kind of paralysis, whatever. No one will be paralyzed. And the Jewish people will be perfect also in their money and in their chachma. So take a look. What happens after the Briz Bein Absarim? What's the next thing that Hashem tells Avram at the end of the parsha? He said, Hashem appears to Avram, which is referring to after the coming of Mashiach. And he says to him, Ani Kel Shakai, I am Kel Shakai, Hesaleich Lefanai Veheyei Tamim. Walk before me and you will be complete. So that's referring to our days where we're entering right now, when we're going to walk in front of Hashem and we're going to be shalom begufam, we're going to be complete in our bodies. shalom in our spiritual state, as Hashem says, I'm going to remove the stone heart from you, so you're going to be able to experience me fully in your heart. And another thing is, he says, and Hashem gives Avram a name, and he calls him Avraham. He adds a hey to his name. And what is the meaning of that? Till now, you were only an Av to your people. Now you're going to be Av Hamoin Goyim. You're going to be a father to nations. After Mashiach will come, all the nations in the world will be in awe of the Jewish people. And all of them will be serving the Jewish people. Not because, chas v'shalom, we're looking to be, oppressive, chas v'shalom, or we're looking to be above everyone else. It's because the Jewish people are going to be filled with unbelievable godly knowledge, and the entire world will understand and appreciate that knowledge that will come forth from Israel, from the Jewish people, and everybody will say, we will take care of everything for you so you can only get more knowledge and teach us and teach us and teach us and teach us. You don't have anything else to do but to teach us. And then, and it says over there that any nation that's not going to serve you, I'm going to destroy. So we see that that's going to be when the Jewish people are going to be Av Hamoin Goyim. And the beautiful thing that he concludes is, how are we going to become an Av Hamoin Goyim? What's going to make the nations respect the Jewish people? Is because Hashem adds you see in Avram Avinu that Hashem added a hey to his name. What's the hey? He says the hey is referring to the Torah, is the hey, because there's five books of Torah. It's the very same hey that Hashem created heaven and earth. Because it says, Eile tol d'shamayim, this is the chronicles of heaven, Shemayim va'aretz. In Parshas Bereishis, it says, Bihi Baram, when he created them. And the sages say the word Bihi Baram is supposed to be read Behei Baram. Hashem created them with a hey. Simply it means with a breath, that Hashem created the world with the hey, with the breath of speech, or the five organs of speech, as Chassidus explains. But deeper than that means the inner intention of creation is the Torah. The Torah is the five books. And that's the power behind all of creation. And what's going to happen when Mashiach comes is that's when Yidden are going to have assimilated the Torah completely. So Avram is going to become Avraham, because then is when we're really going to understand the Torah. And then the nations will respect us for this infinite knowledge that we're going to bring, which they are going to see is not just the knowledge of the Torah, but it is the knowledge of the universe, because the entire world was derived from the Torah. So to get deeper knowledge into the mysteries of the universe, to understand the science of the world, we will have to understand the Torah. And he says, until the point of Avram's Bris Milah, Avram learned Torah before that, but he didn't understand its inner meaning. The hay of the Torah, the deepest element of it wasn't revealed to him. After his Bris Milah, the secrets of the Torah unraveled before him. And that's the same with the Jewish people. The Torah we've had till now is a closed book. We haven't really understood its secrets. We haven't really understood its endless depth. When Mashiach will come, Mashiach Tzidkenu is going to teach us Torah. Torah Chadasha Me'iti Teitze, a new Torah is going to emerge from me. And that Torah is going to open up our eyes. And we're going to have such depth and endless knowledge in the Torah. And that is what's going to bring us to be called Avraham, Master Bihi Baram, the entire creation. Because the same Avram is Bihi Baram. And become Av Hamoin Goyim, be a father, a caring father, not an abusive father, a caring father to all the nations of the world, teaching, inspiring, guiding all of humanity to know Hashem. And this is the story of this week's of Parshas Lech Lecha. To add one more dimension to this, this is from the student of the Rajma. Gems, mamish gems, that's hidden, and that's really all has been said before. The other thing that I want to add to this is that Avram as well builds three mizbeachs in Parshas Lech Lecha. Three mizbeachs. The first mizbeach that he built was, as soon as he comes into the land, Hashem promises in the land, he builds a mizbeach. Two psukim later it says that he went to Beis El and he builds a mizbeach to Hashem. That's in the area of Shechem. And then later, he builds a third Mizbeach when he comes to Chevron. After Lot separated from him, he builds a third Mizbeach when he's in Chevron. So Rashi explains the meaning of the first two Mizbeachs. Rashi says the first Mizbeach he built as gratitude and thanksgiving to Hashem for promising him that he's going to have children and that he's going to have the land of Israel. Right when he came in, Hashem said, "Lezaracha, to your children, I'll give you them land." The land, so Avram says, well, I'm going to have children and I'm going to get the gift of Eretz Yisrael. So he builds a Mizbeach to thank Hashem for that. The second Mizbeach that he built two Psukim later when he comes to Shechem, Rashi says it was because he saw that his children are going to have a blemish over there, because with Achan, they took from the spoils of Yericha, and then they came to the Ai, and then they didn't do well at the war against Ai because they took from the spoils of Yericha. So Avram davened for them because of their kishline, Rashi says, because of their fall. And finally, by the third Mizbeach, mysteriously, Rashi doesn't make a comment. He doesn't say at all why they built. If Rashi feels it important to explain why he built the Mizbeach, how come he doesn't say it by the third Mizbeach? And I just want to conclude with this fascinating idea. The Rebbe says, this is from the Rebbe. The Rebbe explains that the three Mizbeachs are referring to the three Mizbeachs in history. The first Beis HaMikdash Mizbeach, the second Beis HaMikdash is Mizbeach, and the third Beis HaMikdash is Mizbeach. What's the difference between the three Mizbeachs? He says the first Mizbeach, Rashi says, is because Hashem promises us children and the land. What does that mean? We have a beautiful relationship with God. We're doing what He gave us, the Torah. We're obeying His Torah. He's taking care of us. Everything is very nice and dandy. That was the Jewish people during the first Beis HaMikdash. We were tzaddikim. We haven't yet messed up the relationship. Yes, of course, it was a bumpy road here and there, but in general, the Jewish people are still in God's good grace. Our avodah at that time is with the intention to get all the goodies. Like a tzaddik serves Hashem, meaning to get the good. The real good is to connect Hashem. We want to connect Hashem, like a tzaddik connects to Hashem, through Torah mitzvahs. And that's the meaning of the first Mizbeach. It's for us to be in a relationship with Hashem, because through Torah mitzvahs, which was really the Mizbeach of the first Beis HaMikdash, Avodas HaTzadikim. We went to Galus, we sinned, we messed up. We came back in the second Beis HaMikdash, and we were Balei Tshuva. And the big quality of the Balei Tshuva is running away from the darkness, can't stand the separation, got the heartbreak of the separation, now wants to return. Very powerful. The second Mizbeach Avram Avinu built is there was a glitch, there was a fall. Achan did an Avera. Avram is davening to repair the damage of the Avera. So you see, it's the Mizbeach of the Baal Tshuva. There is something that needs to be repaired. And that's the second Beis HaMikdash, when we're repairing the damage of our broken relationship. Then is the third Mizbeach that Avram is building. The third Mizbeach is corresponding to the last and final Beis HaMikdash. That Beis HaMikdash, the Rebbe says an amazing thing. By the third Beis HaMikdash, the Eibishter is going to be fully revealed. When Hashem is going to be fully revealed, there's not going to be any more concealments. We are going to be 1,000% completely buttled to Him, nullified. Our Dveikus in Hashem is going to be perfect. At that moment, we're not going to feel ourselves at all. The only reason we're going to build a Mizbeach is for the sake of building a Mizbeach, because that's what it's for Hashem. You see, the other Mizbeach has some ulterior motive. Even when we're building a Mizbeach as Tzadikim, we're thinking about us and the relationship. We want to be connected, we want the physical blessings that come along with it, in B'chukai Se Telechu, whatever it says, all of that. Second Beis HaMikdash, it's also, we're hurt by the break, we want to come back, we want to do tshuva. But finally, when we're really in a good state with Hashem, we're not even thinking of ourselves at all. There doesn't have to be any explanation why we make a Mizbeach. We build a Mizbeach just for the sake, Rashi doesn't say anything, because that's the whole point of this Mizbeach, just to make a Mizbeach, meaning just to make a Nachas Ruach for Hashem, for no other reason. And in that state is going to be our service after Mashiach comes. And the Rebbe says, adds to that, that the Medrash, even though Rashi doesn't say it, the Medrash says the reason why Avram built the Mizbeach in Chevron was because Chevron is where they made David HaMelech as a king. They crowned David HaMelech. This is the connection. David HaMelech is the pathway to Mashiach. Not only that, he is, according to some places in Psukim, as we spoke earlier, it says David himself is Mashiach, or at least his neshama is embedded in Mashiach Tzidkenu's neshama. So therefore, the kingdom of David is related to the third Mizbeach that Avram Avinu builds in Hebron. It's all about Malchus Beis David, which is which brings the Jewish people to a service of Hashem, where we're not doing it for anything other, for no other reason but to serve Hashem, which is where we're hopefully holding right now. May we merit to see the Geula Shleima, and we should continue the studies of all these amazing ideas, Be'ezras Hashem, already in Yerushalayim, Bekarav Mamish. Okay, everyone have a really gebenchte week, much mazel and bracha, and Mashiach now.